views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and really looking forward to spending the next hour with you and helping you experience some groundbreaking ways to really transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, helping us understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited to have Martha Meiser, who I view as a pioneer in the field of leadership development, here with us today to have a really interesting conversation about what happens that when organizations sometimes try to collaborate, they're looking in all the wrong places. And we're going to have a really fascinating conversation delving into that. And this perspective on our larger culture can really help us more easily understand how to create brilliant organizations and also what might hold us back from that. So I'm going to introduce Martha. Martha Meiser is the founder and president of Aduro Consulting, which is a Boston-based consulting and coaching firm. She specializes in leadership and change for purpose-driven companies. Over the past 30 years, Martha has held leadership positions in both private and public sector organizations. She spent 12 years with the city of Hartford, Connecticut, working in a variety of capacities, including director of operations improvement and assistant city manager for administrative services. Her 14 years in the financial services sector includes 4 years living and working in the Netherlands, where she was the global head of leadership and change for ING. Today's Martha's focus is on working with purpose-driven companies, those organizations which seek to have an impact beyond the bottom line. In particular, she focuses on disrupting organizations so that people think differently about themselves and their relationships. This leads to organizations that are more awake, more passionate, more human, and more focused, all of which adds up to better business results. Martha has a BA in American Studies from Hamilton College, an MPA in public administration from Syracuse University, and a PhD in leadership and change from Antioch University. And here's my favorite part of her bio. She lives in Boston with Andy, her husband, of over 40 years. In addition, she is the mom of three and the very, very young grandmother of three grandsons. Welcome, Martha.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here with you today. Thanks for
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've been looking forward to this conversation. Whenever I have these types of conversations with people like you who are out doing such interesting work, it's fascinating. We all learn so much.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to
it. Yeah. So I know one of the things when you and I were chatting before this interview, one of the things we really wanted to talk about was this idea of collaboration, right, in organizations, and that sometimes it's really challenging and it's not quite what it seems to be. Can you tell us more about that? What are some of those challenges with collaboration?
Sure. Yes, I guess you can say I've been at this topic for decades now and kind of endlessly fascinating, and I like to say it's kind of elusive at the same time, because I think we've all had experiences. I mean, we wouldn't be able to talk about collaboration if we haven't had good experiences starting in our childhood. So we know what it looks like. It's kind of like we know it when we see it, but it seems to be, I've been working in organizations for 8 minutes, but over 40 years now. And it seems to be that every organization deals with situations where they have kind of endemic conflict, some kind of blaming, fear-based cultures, a lot of turf, finger-pointing. So bottom line is you're working with people in situations where there's you're with strangers who have less similarity. That's one reason why it's where you have to reach across. And another one is because we just have really outdated ways of working in organization. Hierarchies not tend to create collaboration. They're great for control, but not for connection. And these tools tend to work with a lot of forms, you know, command and control, kind of HR practice. That's a little bit about why it's so tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes so much sense the way we're, you know, we're asking people, as you're saying, to come together in all these different ways that you are just articulated so clearly, right. Yet, you know, so many organizations are really not set up for it, right? They don't have the structure in place. They don't have the mentality, right? The ways of connecting and relating in place to really be able to collaborate effectively. Yes. Yeah. And that's a huge piece. And it's interesting how that comes up, has come up with some of the other folks I've chatted with on the show, that there's this kind of machine-like mechanistic way of viewing how people change.
Yes.
And it just, as we know, just not to state the obvious, but it doesn't work.
Right.
It in no way works, because it's just not how we work as people. Yet it's interesting. It continues.
Yeah. We're learning a lot about it. We know a lot about it. But it but I think when on the ground, when you're in the playing field with the organization, you'll talk to a lot of the different folks in the organization. They say we need more collaboration. I think there's a compelling why that's seen a lot of times. Sounds like a good idea. Yep, we need to collaborate. But it's a little utilitarian. For what? Well, so that we can produce better business. Yes. That doesn't usually get people out of bed in the morning. And, you know what I mean? And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't fundamentally inspire them to go have the.
Yeah, it really, really doesn't. And we're actually going to take a quick break and come back, because this is such an interesting topic, and I want to make sure we can delve more deeply into this idea, as you were saying, of like what inspires us to collaborate, right, is not saying we should collaborate.
Right.
So we'll take a quick break. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence with Claudette Rowley. We are going to be right back in a few minutes to continue this interesting conversation about what collaboration really looks like in organizations. So stay tuned.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, Sarah Luce, brings her unique style to the hit show, Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuoS.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-9000. 972-5366.
We are back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and I'm talking with Martha Meiser, for those of you just joining us. And we were just delving into a really interesting conversation about democracy and organizations. We don't always think about organizations being democratic. That's fascinating. So, Martha, tell us more about what are we talking about when we talk about democracy?
Let me back up just a little bit. It's a really lovely, rich, great, broad question. And
I think
excellent. What got me into it, we could easily spend a lot of time on this. What got me into this was really starting to back up from this, if the focus just on the organization, to put it in a broader, you know, look at it from a broader lens, mm-hmm. and thinking about the if you look at it from a wider lens, I think that probably the most daunting collaboration challenge you could come up with is democracy, which, mm-hmm. you know, is obviously comes from Greek. It means rule by the people. It absolutely demands collective problem solving. So before we look at organizations again, I wanted to kind of take a more of a meta view of what would be the benefit of looking at this question of collaboration from democracy? So I think there's a couple of things here that really interest me. One is that if you look at collaboration through this lens, you can make the argument, and many do, that democracy is only as good as its institutions. Mm-hmm. So in other words, our families, our churches, our schools, our organizations fundamentally is where we learn the behaviors and the ways we interact with each other that, you know, lay down the norms that create the foundation for democratic process and action. So I think, okay, that's interesting. So where is business in there? This is a fundamentally really important place where we learn how to behave as citizens. Mm-hmm. The second part of this to me is, you know, there's a pretty active debate going on in our society, and broader than that is what is the future of democracy? Is it in jeopardy? And
right.
I think one of the things that really interests me, and this is true in every institution, is democracy is not a thing. It's mm-hmm. not something that happens that you put in place. It is an ongoing process that is continually recreated in our behaviors, in our conversations on a daily basis, which, by the way, is exactly how collaboration works in organization. You don't just collaborate one day and then you're done with it. It's constantly being reproduced on a daily basis.
And so, I find what's interesting about that is I find organizations often are looking, and this may be spoken or unspoken, but inherently looking for something that's like, okay, like you said, okay, oh, good, we've collaborated. Check it off.
Yes.
Oh, good, we've built trust.
Yes.
Good, we're done. Let's move on.
Perfect. Yes, exactly.
And it, like you said, it is a completely ongoing process.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It doesn't stop. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, and you tell me if you have this experience also, Claudette, is when they think about what's collaboration is, well, what does it look like? It's kind of like peace and harmony, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're all happy. We're all working together. And but if you really dive into any kind of when you've accomplished anything, there's some hard work involved. And so, what is the hard work involved in democracy? And you can bring that into organizations. Is what do we really mean? How is democracy done in a concrete kind of on the playing field sort of way? Mm-hmm. So that's what led me to, this is kind of the path I've been on is how is democracy going to help us learn how to, or how is looking at democracy help us with this inquiry?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I found along the way when I was working on my doctorate, I did some research into, I was looking at a lot of different research that was being done about in the arena of peace studies, and particularly, by the way, women's work in creating democratic organizations and nations and peace building.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one particular study that just really captivated me, done by a woman named Cynthia Coburn, who's a British researcher. And I'll give you an example. This is completely non-business, but I think it's so useful because we want to apply it back to business and organizations.
Oh, please share this example. Yes.
Yeah. So what she did is she studied three sets of women's groups that were working cross boundaries in some of the most difficult, violent, wars that were happening. So they were Israel, across Israel, Palestine, Bosnia, Herzegovina, and Northern Ireland. And they were, in all cases, they were groups of women who reached across boundaries and found with the quote from her was like, how did they found a way to fill the space, between their differences with words instead of bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And the question she asked that I think is so relevant for us is not like just like what is democracy, but how is it done?
Mm-hmm.
And here's what she found, which I thought was, again, I've been doing this for years. It was what it did is it validated kind of what we were saying earlier, Claudette, which is it's mm-hmm. not like this check the box thing.
Right.
When she saw it in action, she said it was not about peace and harmony, but about actually denying the closure, about keeping the process open. And that what the women did in all cases is they took the time to understand each other in a very deep way. And they did this by tackling really tough topics, confronting differences, exposing assumptions. They were not looking for agreement and consensus, which I think is the important point.
Mm-hmm.
What she said, and this is her quote, is they were consciously engaged with the difficult reality of unavoidable, unending, careful, respectful struggle.
Mm,
and it was that term, respectful struggle, I thought, okay, that's an interesting way. Let's, put collaboration, put that word over a little bit on the side.
Mm-hmm.
What if the essence of democracy, which we've said is kind of like the mega collaboration challenge. What if it is about respectful struggle?
Mm-hmm.
What if that is the dynamic essence of democracy? And what we're really hoping to achieve here is to work together to overcome really tough issues where there's mm-hmm. little agreement and no mm-hmm. apparent answers. And we're going to have to struggle on this together. So that is, I think, starts to get us into the arena of what we're talking about when we're, like real collaboration, the not to check the box kind.
Right. Yeah. The real stuff. Yeah. And what strikes, I love this story and thanks for sharing it. What's striking me is the quote about the difficult reality of unavoidable, unending, careful, respectful struggle, and that we mm-hmm. can, I think for some organizations and some, individual people, hard to accept mm-hmm. the idea that something's unavoidable or potentially, at least for a while, unending.
Mm-hmm.
To continue to work through it. And that this, when we say respectful struggle, like the key word for me in that is respectful.
Yes.
Right. So we're not slinging mud at each other. We're not, engaging in bad behaviors. We're really saying, I am listening to you.
Yes.
I respect your, I agree with you, but I respect what you have to say and believe that has value in this conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I like the kind of paradoxical respectful with the struggle too, because the struggle for me, it also changes the nature of that to a recognition that we may not be able to agree on this, but we can hear each other
mm-hmm.
and that out of the hearing each other, something new may be born. We may find some new possibilities. And it will begin with how we can connect and respect each other. Another way of saying it, and another kind of, is that there's some inherent dignity we both bring to the situation. And if we can respect that parts of ourselves, we can begin to hear each other.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had a few weeks ago, Dr. Donna Hicks, who wrote the book Dignity, just popped to mind.
Yes.
Dignity,
yes.
I know you're familiar.
Yes.
Yeah, and so she did a great, you know, we had a really fun conversation about that and just what, as you're saying, what new possibilities can emerge when people can truly listen to each other in respectful ways that honor their dignity. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think part of where, when I begin to say, okay, so where does this, what does this mean inside our organizations? It's a matter of scale, perhaps. We may have different issues inside our businesses than they do working across, for example, Israeli-Palestinian. However, they have very common qualities. And I guess another way of saying it is the thing that is that in business, I think, is an opportunity to learn how to, and I think they actively are, learning how do we have conversations, difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a practice ground. It's a place where we can learn how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So it may look different there.
Mm-hmm.
But if I look at my own career, I had to start very early in my career learning how to stand up for myself, how to put an issue on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And if I look back on that, I would say in almost every case, I came away, it was hard. It took courage. I was afraid. But I came away with a better relationship and more trust between me and the other party.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm Claudette Rowley, and you're listening to Cultural Brilliance. And we will be right back to continue this conversation. Stay tuned.
Treat the body and expand the soul on June 1st with Lynn Brown. In this all-inclusive retreat, you'll treat your body with breakout sessions in the various elements of nature, enjoy fireside chats while harnessing the healing energy of fire, allow more light with more ease, and activate that connection between the body and spirit. Call 206-931-7356 or visit lynnmbrown.com.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
Awareness is universal. Establishing a living awareness through meditation brings peaceful, healthy, and creative well-being into your everyday life. The practice of living awareness, Spiritfire's own meditation practice, is built on this belief and is designed for every level of practitioner. Each year, Spiritfire hosts living awareness meditation retreats that allow you to explore the practice in depth at our retreat center in beautiful Western Massachusetts. Introduce yourself to meditation and the practice at the Foundation's Retreat. Attend, in silence, a silent meditation retreat focused on mindfulness, presence, and nature. Or be engaged with the meditation sittings themselves at the Deepening Retreat. Start adding to your awareness and attend a meditation retreat designed to cultivate consciousness in your everyday life. For details on attending a Living Awareness Meditation Retreat, visit upcoming events at www.spiritfire.com.
Do you feel that there's a bigger, better life for you? Is there anything holding you back from living the life you were meant to live? If you'd like to find your life's true purpose and calling, join the world's foremost authority on primal spirituality, David Karsher, in Becoming a Son Radio, emotional and spiritual intelligence for a happy, fulfilling life. Tune in once a month to Becoming a Son Radio with David Karsher on the Dr. Pat Show and Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit davidkarsher.com today.
Do you want to tap into your true potential, get creative, and learn to live with more joy? Join Vicki Todd, host of Unstuck Joy, in Art Vision Journaling. Draw, doodle, collage, and write your way to intuitively creating your ultimate life vision with simple art prompts. No experience necessary. Vicki will show you how. All art supplies are included. Join Vicki every second Saturday monthly, 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific, at Spa Air in Kirkland, Washington. To register, visit spaair.com. That's spaair.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley, and my guest today is Martha Miser, who is a pioneer in the field of leadership development, for those of you who are just joining us. One thing I'm curious about in what we've been discussing so far is, what is the role of the leadership mm-hmm. in this kind of organization? What are the leaders doing?
Yeah, it's a really great question. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of different ways to look at that. A current example comes to mind for me of a leader, actually more than one, but some of the leaders I've been working with. I think one of the defaults, and it's kind of been to our detriment on leadership, is this kind of notion of the heroic leader mm-hmm. who has to somehow have the answers and solve the problems.
Knows everything, right?
Right. And I think we know that is a very flawed assumption. Mm-hmm. If it's a simple problem and they do know the answer and they have the expertise, fine, you know, have at it, go solve it. But in most cases, we're dealing with issues that are more complex, or, you know, as Ron Heifetz likes to say, they're adaptive issues that require mm-hmm. changes in values and mindsets, et cetera. So I think the role of the leader is a number of things. One is to be a really good listener. And not listening to solve the problem, but listening to understand what is the dynamic tension here? What's the source of the issue? Who needs to have this conversation? And what kind of, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, container, meaning team meeting, setting, environment, what needs to be, what can I help assemble that will mm-hmm. make sure that this conversation or this dialogue we need to have is as productive as possible. And the leader could be involved in it, him or herself, or it might be what they're doing is recognizing that it needs to occur among other people. Mm-hmm. So sometimes those are conflicts, but the example I wanted to refer to is an organization I'm working with where the leader wants to shift it from kind of this very patriarchal, I will tell you what to do, hierarchical structure. Mm-hmm. to one where people are able to have the dialogue they need to have to sort the problems out, you know, to solve the problems themselves. I mean, heck, we go home, we solve our problems very happily by ourselves. We don't need a boss at home to tell us what to do. So we were working with him to actively create a process where, and what he's saying to people is, I set you free. Tell me what resources you need. And I actually trust you to sort this out, to figure it out, to come to conclusion, and to solve these problems. So it's a great example of a leader who's kind of deliberately empowering in a positive way, because he's involved, he's getting them the resources, he's there, he's not like abdicating, but he's not trying to direct it. He's actually trusting them, I guess I would say. So it's a very different, it's kind of a scary thing for some, for a leader who feels that they need to be controlling everything. It's kind of fundamentally being trusting the process and the ability of the organization to mm-hmm. work it through, and people work it through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it's such a completely different lens on leadership. Uh-huh. One thing I'm hearing is that you're, not to distill down what you said, what one theme I heard was the leader in a way is creating these conversations.
Yes.
Is pulling them together and say, okay, I'm part of it or I'm not, but you all need to get together and figure this out. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, if I can build on that word, even conversation, I'm more and more coming to the conclusion that, and this is where you get to your earlier question, Claudette, about what does it mean to be, you know, when we kind of talk about democracy and organizations.
Yeah.
And we, at every level, It's fundamentally about the quality of the conversations we have. I believe more and more that an organization, the quality of that organization culture, and therefore the result it produces, depends on the quality of the conversations that they have. And I think that's true at a very broad social level, and it's across the board. And I found this great quote from Jonathan Sacks, whose book I just recently read, The Dignity of Difference. And he's just this wonderful thinker. And he says, "The greatest single antidote to violence is conversation, speaking our fears, listening to the fears of others, and in that sharing of vulnerabilities, discovering a genesis of hope." Mm. I thought, now that, isn't that great? It's like, that is beautiful. What I mean by conversation. And that's where, in essence, when you say about what can leaders do, they can model that. Mm-hmm. But I think we also need to teach people, because our schooling system and we don't have enough education around how do you have quality conversations. We spend a lot of time on technical skills, mm-hmm. but I think I spend most of my time teaching people how to have quality conversations.
Yeah, I would agree. when you distill it down, often I'll have a leader, a team, whatever, whoever I'm working with,
right,
come to me and say, well, we're trying to deal with this situation with so-and-so. And almost always the first thing I say, well, how did it go when you talked with them? Oh,
yes.
Well, we haven't done that.
Yes. Isn't that interesting? So many times. Talk.
Yeah. Talk. Really? Well, because to your point, we're not often educated, right? We don't, mm-hmm. people don't, because they don't have the skills sometimes, or they're just, they mm-hmm. don't feel afraid. They don't have the courage or confidence. They may have the skills, right? But something gets in their way.
Right.
But it is the quality of the conversation. And I'm struck by, whenever my own work on cultural, organizational culture, the reading I'm doing, writing, talking with folks like you, the theme that keeps coming up over and over again, many themes, but the one foundational one is listening, respect, trust, telling the truth, and having conversations.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm having absolutely the same experience, Claudette. And it is amazing how important and critical it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you, as you said, slow it down. Because, for example, just listening. You can talk about listening, but what is essence listening? So much of our listening, we think we're listening, but we actually are more listening to our own internal monologue about what uh-huh. do I think about this? What's my judgment about this? How am I going to respond? What I think they should do, so that there's so much noise going on. So I find that this, and it can be done. You and I both know this. We do this
uh-huh.
work, which is, and it's actually... It's easy to teach. It's a lifetime of practice to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can teach people how to listen non-judgmentally, when they see the distinction, they can do it. They can say, aha, I understand how I can suspend my judgment. I can choose to take a stance of curiosity. I can
mm-hmm.
actually begin to see both. And when I'm able to do that, they can do that. And
mm-hmm.
it seems to be a great antidote. For a lot of the kind of endemic conflict in the organization, it's kind of a real great privilege to be doing that a lot all the time.
It is a privilege,
right.
And one thing I can share with folks is, to your point about curiosity, is that
mm-hmm.
I always say, at least in my mind, my brain cannot judge and be curious simultaneously. So going into curiosity, I could judge you before or after, but if I'm genuinely curious and over there with you, listening to you,
right.
I can't be judging. It just can't do both at once. Curiosity is such a great, it's a great way to give people a real opportunity,
mm-hmm.
to listen and communicate in the ways we've been talking about. Yeah.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
Along those lines, I think the neuroscience is interesting too, because it's also teaching us that not only can we not be judgmental and curious at the same time, but we know now that when we're triggered, when our reptilian brain gets triggered, the amygdala, that we are incapable of feeling empathy, and we cannot think. It actually shuts down our ability to think rationally. So one of the things I think that's also useful when we're helping people learn this is to be, there's so much inward work, and there's actually a lot, went back to democracy for a moment, great conversations about what is the democracy is, you know, it's processes and all these other things, but it is fundamentally about our inward work. Because mm-hmm. you have to learn to think and reason critically and understand what triggers you so that when you are triggered, oh, I am not thinking rationally right now. Oh, mm-hmm. I am unable to experience empathy for others or for myself because I'm also judging myself. Mm-hmm. And begin to be aware of this in a way so that you have some mastery and able to, you know, self-manage. That's, I think, again, that key to the conversations. There's a lot of complicated things happening. I'm listening to you with curiosity. I'm suspending my judgment. And I'm also tuning into myself at the same moment about what all the body sensations, thoughts, and everything that is happening inside me at the same time. It's a mm-hmm. fairly complicated process that we're asking people to embark on.
It is a fairly complicated process. And we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And before we do that, though, would you like to share your contact information for our listeners? How might they get in touch with you?
Great. Thanks, Claudette. You can get in touch with me. My email is martha@aduroconsulting.net. You can look me up on my website, www.aduroconsulting.net.
Oh, perfect. Thanks for sharing that.
All right. Yeah, great.
Yeah, this is Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to spend some time talking about what a truly collaborative culture looks like and sounds like, which we've been building, you know, painting this picture, right? Building this scenario. But we're going to get into some, you know, if you're listening and thinking, wow, I'd love to make some of those shifts in my culture, we're going to talk about some of the steps you can take. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
Thrive is what we experience when our mind, body, and soul operate as one. When we thrive, we excel on all levels. Thrive is the mindset that matters. It is essential to our being. Have you ever found yourself looking for the instruction manual on how to thrive? You'll find everything you need to help you feel strong, powerful, and peaceful in your own body. So don't waste any more time. Visit thrivebyjen.com today.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Treat the body and expand the soul on June 1st with Lynn Brown. Imagine 3 days in a hand-built log home nestled in the Cascade Mountain. Activate the collaboration between the body and spirit and allow the accelerated connection as one of the most powerful ways to light up your cells, honor the body's needs in this all-inclusive event. Visit lynnmbrown.com or call 206-931-7356.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, having a really interesting conversation today with my guest, Martha Meiser. So, Martha, we have been talking about collaboration, what democracy looks like in organizations, you know, how respectful struggle feeds into that. And we had just had a really great conversation about the power of listening, right? And helping people understand how to really actually have conversations that get them somewhere. What are some tips or, you know, ways of thinking about this that can help listeners who are thinking, wow, I'd love more of that in my organization?
Okay. Let me suggest a few things. There's, you know, obviously many things you can say about that, but I'll offer four right now in terms of some things that I think are useful. And again, all of these are about how do we, I guess from the broadest perspective is to have this kind of, maybe you want to call it a collaborative culture, one that actually is able to engage in the conversations that need to have. It does take mindset. It takes some skill. It takes practice. It takes courage. So a few things to think about. One of them is to being committed to doing the inward work. I think so much of our organizational structures, and this is kind of that legacy of the past that you and I talked about earlier, focuses on extrinsic measures of success, you know, like status, title, salary, and it's very externally focused. So part of it is just being committed that my fulfillment as a human being, not to mention my effectiveness as a business professional, is about my inward work. So what is it, you know, what do I need to know about myself, and really just being committed to that inward piece, you know, inward life for myself. A second thing is to look at your organization and to what extent is it cultivating adult-to-adult relationships. We have this kind of implicit paternalistic flavor that still flows, and it's kind of embedded in our hierarchies. And it tends to work against democratic practice, which really says that all parties are equally capable adults. So to what extent is it creating these power, these one-down power dynamics, and to what extent can we actually design an organization that allows for these kind of adult-to-adult relationships? A third one, you and I were talking about this earlier, is to stop judging and start listening. And I think you're in agreement. I cannot say this enough. It seems to be almost like the most critical thing. It's like, and then people, well, I'm not judging. Well, we do. That's what the way our minds are set up. They're set up, you know, they're like scanning. But if we've done that inner work, if we've actually begun to see the ways in which we judge, if we understand that we can turn on our curiosity, then you can stop to listen, and not in a dualistic way, not like right, wrong, but just what is being endlessly curious about that person's perspective. So don't assume agreement. It's not about coming to agreement, like I was saying with the respectful struggle earlier. It's about, can I actually connect with and hear this person in a respectful way? And then the fourth one is kind of a mindset, a willingness to be transformed, to be able to see if I am able to engage with this person in a way that I can hear them. I don't have to give up my point of view. There's no requirement on that. But if you're willing to be a both and thinker, I can see their worldview as well, you might actually find yourself learning something new. And you might actually find yourself with this person coming to some new possibility that you had never, you know, actually even imagined before. So those are a few things I would suggest. And in that way, I think really it is about, you know, a lot of experimenting, having and recognizing that there's a number of different kinds of conversations, you know. I'm a manager. My conversations on development and performance. There's conversations about how we get results done and action together. How do we create and innovate together? How do we align with each other? There's such a rich variety of conversations. There's endless opportunities to experiment here. And as you had said earlier so nicely, not check the box. This is a living process. This is mm-hmm. one where you don't collaborate and check the box, but one where it's a life's work to get better and better at it.
It's not
a static thing. Yeah.
It's not static. Right. Yeah. It's not. Good. I've listened. Right. I think that is not for all people, but for some people, real mindset shift that this isn't ongoing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We don't just go through a team building process and, okay, we're good, right? No, you keep coming back to those team conversations, right? They're iterative. Right. Something new happens. And it was the last thing you mentioned about being willing to be transformed was making me think of a colleague of mine who talks a lot about Ron Heifetz's work on adaptive mm-hmm. change and how you cannot lead an adaptive change without being willing to be transformed as a leader in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, that transformation piece is a big part of it.
Uh-huh. It absolutely is. I'm as guilty as the next person of being very wedded to the way I think things to be done. And how many times have we had that example where something entirely new came out of it? So with the clients I work with, it is about not trying to solve their problems for them, but trust that they will learn something and come to some new realization and understanding if they're willing to kind of get in the ring and have that and engage in a very meaningful way with each other. It's not easy, and it takes some. I think part of it, Claudette, and why people mm-hmm. avoid it is fear, and there's a sense of being vulnerable.
Oh yeah.
And yet the rewards. Are so huge.
The rewards are so huge. It's a great mm-hmm. yeah. It's a great point. You know, And I've been working with a team, and they all sat down. It was last week, and said, actually, it was just Monday. Whew, long week. They actually mm-hmm, said, mm-hmm. you know what? We have huge trust issues on this team. Like, we actually need to, like, everything else stems from this. You know, and they had the courage to actually state it.
Yes.
So it's huge when that happens.
Right. I have in several cases worked with teams where I've asked them to think about who in this room do you need to have a conversation with or that you would like to have a conversation with to improve the relationship. And I've never had anybody say, I can't think of anybody. And mm-hmm. I'll say, will you promise and tell me by when will you have that conversation? And I've had teams take it very seriously. And then a week or two later say, you know, there's been a lot of really good conversations taking place out there. Because sometimes mm-hmm. it's a full team and sometimes I need to go talk to that one person. Mm-hmm. And I know just from, again, my own early work experiences where, you know, I had to, go in there and have with one of my bosses or actually several of them probably say, here's something that happened. And that didn't work for me. And here's what the impact was. And we need to do this differently. And we kind of hashed it over. And it mm-hmm. was hard.
It was
but
hard.
It
yeah.
worked.
It worked.
Was hard, but it worked.
It worked. And on that note, Martha, do you have a personal message you want to share with listeners as we're wrapping up?
You know, I do.
Closing remarks. Yeah.
I think, you know, a couple things occur to me. One is I had a quote recently I read that says, democracy means paying attention.
mm-hmm.
And I like this about really, if we pay attention to, and I would ask people to think about what conversations, if you paid attention, are you avoiding or that you would like to have, or that if you knew you would have it, if you had the courage to have it, it would make a difference. So mm-hmm. I would just encourage people to try out respectful struggle, to kind of get on the court, be willing to fail, be willing to succeed, be willing to learn. But knowing that that's the work that makes both us tip as human beings, organizations more effective, and I think it has a broader benefit to society as large.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'd like to end with.
Oh, well, that's such an amazing message. Thank you. So, and thank you, Martha, for being on the show today and for sharing such great information. And thank you, everybody, for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. I, as always, had a great time. Please join me on the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. And in a couple of weeks, I will be talking with a gentleman who is the founder of something called the Culture Summit. So, wonderful. Thank you so much, Martha.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.